This is what Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. How you doing? I give a shit. I do. Listen. I got my eye on you guys. I'm going to help. We are going to be okay. It looks like the world is going to blow up, which it could, either that or burn, which it could. And it's disturbing for all of us, okay? So if it's causing anxiety for you, that means you're normal. And if it's not, that means you're repressed. So get with it, okay? So I'm Dr. Lisa from coming to you from Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks for listening. Radio Free Brooklyn is, in fact, the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere, because that's my area, the whole Western Hemisphere, and that's what I know from reviewing all the stations. So I want to invite you to donate to our Drive to Find 525 fundraising campaign, because we've got some great premiums and stuff. You can get a t-shirt that I designed, but you can also get a t-shirt by some really major other people, that like Cosmo Vinyl. He's huge. David Kramer, big artist. So you should check out our Radio Free Brooklyn /Drive to 5. Okay. This station's really important to our freedom, important to the people, important to everyone. And it's a good thing to contribute to. So here's my guest showing up right now. I got Chris Gersbach coming in. And I'm actually going to be able to give Chris some shit because he's late. And I'm excited about giving him shit, because that's the fun part of being a pretend therapist. You know, when you go to therapy and you're late, the shrink, the first thing they want to do is dig into, like, what's behind that, what issues you have, what resistance you have into coming into therapy. So I'm going to get on that right away with Chris. He's running out right now. He just walked in and now he's running out. Did you? He's saying he just came from therapy. Great. Well, put on your headphones, please. But as long as Chris is here right now, I'm going to tell you about him, why he's getting himself arranged and putting on his headphones. He's actually he's a crack podcaster and stuff like that. So he knows the drill. Anyway, I met Chris a while ago, a comedy class initially, and Chris is a very, very well-liked, lovely, talented human being. And this is what it says. I need to find out kind of like where his focus is. Maybe he needs more focus. We're going to find out. But he's a comedian, producer, and writer based in Queens, which is probably why he's late. He currently produces and makes regular appearances on comedy podcasts, Dave Hill History Fluffer, Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident. And so you're Canadian with Dave Hill. So he's heavily invested in Dave Hill. And I mean, Dave Hill is, you know, he's our God. Kind of our God.
I'm all in on Dave Hill.
We're all apparently. In. Yeah. I mean, I totally relate to your partnering or whatever, your wanting to even be in the same room with Dave Hill, because that's common. A lot of people. Dave, shut up. I know if you're listening that you're going,
he's traveling right now.
He's traveling. Where's he going?
I have no idea.
He's going somewhere without you?
Yeah. Yeah, he does occasionally.
Really? And you don't even know? Do you know where he's going? You don't want to say?
I don't know where. I think he's doing some witch taint stuff right now.
Oh, some music stuff.
I haven't talked to him in a couple of days. So I don't know. He could be anywhere. I just follow his Instagram like everyone else.
Oh. Well, anyway, but you also do a lot of, Chris also does a lot of things, other things. He produces, he handles publicity for Risk with Kevin Allison, mm-hmm. which is huge, and Keith and the Girl, mm-hmm. first podcast, most important podcast ever. And he does work with Frank Conniff, who's really famous. And he's the man, like we met at QED, which is like the best comedy place in the five borough area that I used to make more of an effort to get to, but I've gotten really lazy. And Queens is so far from Bushwick, but it's won by, it's run by the inimitable, incredibly valuable person, Cambry Cruz.
Yes, and who is a goddess.
And you got to know her because you happened to live near QED, right?
Yeah, so I lived in Astoria for, I was just telling someone this yesterday, I lived in Astoria for 12 years up until about a year and a half ago. So, but I lived there for so long that I remember when there was literally like nothing in that neighborhood to do. There was like the beer garden and that was it. Mm. And I wasn't a big beer garden guy. So 5 years ago, Cambry opened up QED and I went there like a couple weeks after it opened because they were doing, Liam Macanini.
Sure. Right?
Yeah, he was doing a live taping of his podcast there and I saw...
Invite your friends.
Tell your friends. And Tom Sharpling and Aparna Nancherla were on. I was a huge Tom Sharpling fan. It was the first time I saw Aparna, but I went there. I was like, oh, cool. Sharpling's doing something in my neighborhood. Like, it was like $5 or something. So I went there and I walk in and Christian Finnegan is like running the door. And I knew Christian just like as a fan. And I was like, wait, are you on the show tonight? He's like, no, my wife owns the place. We just opened up. And I was like, oh man, that's so cool.
So you were kind of a comedy fan and were you performing comedy?
No.
You're a comedy fan.
I was a big comedy fan. Oh. My wife and I used to go to Eastville Comedy Club a lot.
Oh, you're the real deal.
Yeah.
Eastville UCB, Comedy Club. Oh, real fan.
Trying to think of where there was like a bunch of clubs where like where the Comedy Cellar is now in Greenwich.
Yeah.
There used to be like a few other smaller ones. My wife had a friend who was doing stand up at the time, so we kind of got into it that way. Like we would just start going to see him, and then like random like Jim Gaffigan would like drop in. And like
yeah,
Judah he Friedlander does. And
yeah,
stuff, so.
Yeah. I saw him last night. I saw him perform last night. They had a great benefit for Emily. I'm not going to remember her last name, but it was great. It was at Elsewhere. And it was hosted by Josh Gondelman, Judah was there, and let's not get sidetracked. So anyway, it's great to see you.
Thank you.
You look fabulous.
Thank you. I'm so sorry I'm late.
Yeah, no, that's okay. But I do have to dig into, it's actually kind of okay. So here's the thing. Usually I like people to come early so I can grill them on like what we're going to talk about and stuff. So I'll just have to like.
You just grill me in
real
time.
I'm not going to protect you this time. Like I'm not going to find out what you don't want to talk about or anything. It's all free.
Oh, I talk about everything.
That's what everyone says until you bring up their mother.
No, I could talk. I could talk all about my mom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, so why were you late? We got to get down to this. Where's the resistance?
I put it
because I told you to get here at 1:15, and it's okay. I'm giving you shit. I'm totally giving you shit.
No, you should.
Yeah, I'm giving you
shit. Give me a lot of shit.
Okay,
Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, so is this, like, are you late a lot?
No, I'm, like, never late. So this is the thing is I got your email the other day, and I put it into my calendar. And you know how, like, Google, I don't know if you use Google, but, like, it automatically creates an event for you?
Yeah, 1:15, I said, right?
You did say 1:15, but the calendar invite, like, automatically created 2 to 3 p.m. So I was on my way over here, just double checking your email for once I got off the train. I was like, oh, I was supposed to be here 45 minutes ago.
So it's
not your fault at all, but I'm just
No, we're not interested in finding fault. We're interested in the resistance. So here's the annoying question that this always annoys me when my shrink asks me this, but I'm going to ask you this. So is there any reason why you might have screwed that up or wanted to be late?
No, as someone who is constantly booking people on other things, I should really be the last person to be late to anything.
Yes. So you were coming from therapy.
Yes.
Maybe you were focused on that.
Maybe.
Where was therapy?
In Manhattan, Columbus Circle.
Oh, and Columbus Circle. And what time did therapy end?
A couple hours ago.
Oh.
And then I was working and
Anyway, so here you are. And guys, there, you know, there doesn't seem, I don't know. We're going to let this go. We're going to totally, but we got it out of the way, right? We wrestled that to the ground. We examined it. And now we're moving on.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
So, totally. It's fine. It's fine. We're moving on. Anyway, what's going on? So you're involved in so many things now, right?
Yeah.
So what is your life like for real? Like besides this piece of paper that has all the facts on it?
It's, right now I just tell my therapist that it's been exactly a year since I've been like completely freelance, like just doing my own thing. But, I was working full time at QED for a couple of years.
Right.
And then once I started working with Dave, it kind of just, that took up so much of my time that I had to like step back from QED a little bit. So I'm still producing shows there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only working there once a week now. So my role there is like way less than it ever was.
Yeah, you were like, yeah, right. You took a lot of initiative. It was impressive.
For a while, yeah.
They're in a good place now. I mean, they've got their thing going, right?
Yeah.
So like really helped out in the beginning when they were starting up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that place opened, I started hanging out there, and then my wife got me the stand-up class with Carol Montgomery.
Yeah, that we were both in.
That we both in.
Great.
And then just from there, I just took it super seriously and just kind of kept doing more and more.
Yeah.
And then
you had like weekly shows, regular.
Yeah.
You still do, right?
Yeah. Every Friday at 11 now we're doing casual sets, which is like a late night stand-up showcase.
Mm-hmm.
But we have like big names come in.
Yeah, I noticed.
Stuff. And then Movies Are Dumb, which is the Mystery Science Theater type show I do with Frank Conniff. And then Softcore, which is pretty much the same show as Movies Are Dumb, except it's me and Jen Waring showing a softcore porn movie.
Mm.
That's always really fun.
Mm.
The next one of that is on Valentine's Day, actually.
Oh, nice.
That's a good Valentine's Day.
I'll put the link for that on the Facebook page with your other stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then, oh, God. So that's
what's
just
going. Yeah. So that's.
Yeah,
so that, now are you working with. So. Did Dave like hire you?
No. So Dave, I'd known him for a few years just from doing stand up and kept running into him at QED and stuff. And then he was doing his radio show out in Jersey City.
Right. WFMU. He doesn't do that anymore, right?
He doesn't. Yeah. He stopped it because, it's like a 3-hour long show. He lives in Manhattan. So he had to like travel all the way out there.
And management change over there?
I don't know.
Well, he said, whatever. We don't need the gossip right now.
Yeah. I think he was kind of exhausted with doing that. And I was just like, what? Have you ever thought about just doing it as a podcast, like in your apartment? And he's like, oh, can you, like, do you know how to do that? I was like, yeah, I have all the equipment. I'll just bring it over. And then,
oh, wow.
And then from there, we just kind of, I just wanted to help him out as a fan. And I could tell he needed the help to like stay on schedule. Like I was looking back. So Dave Hill's Podcasting Incidents, the podcast he did up until he started doing the radio show. And then he was trying to do them both at the same time and then just stopped doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. But I was like looking back at older episodes and like, he would upload one episode and then like 3 months later, release two more,
mm-hmm.
and like six months later, release a bunch more.
Right.
So it was kind of like very sporadic. So I was like,
and also like, I just want to let you guys know if you haven't heard of Dave Hill, he is just a huge talent. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a huge, unique talent, and he knows I'm such a fan of his.
Yeah.
I'm always telling him that. Yeah. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Yeah. He does it all. I don't know how
he's a great musician. He wrote his band does the music for John Oliver's show. He's hilarious. He can deliver scripted material. He can deliver unscripted. He has great taste, great clothes.
Yeah. I want to go shopping with him.
He's pretty self-effacing, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, really self-effacing, right?
He's really just kind of
shy, right?
He is a little shy. Yeah. I think he and I bond. We have a lot of the same sort of mental illnesses, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And like,
you guys are comfortable. He's comfortable. Yeah, sure.
I feel like we bond over our, you know, our clinical depression and medication.
He's a pretty private guy, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
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 I mean, it doesn't. He's like one of those comedians where you feel like you know him, but in the real life, he's kind of
totally
private.
Yeah. I only just met his girlfriend for the first time like a few months ago.
Yeah. No one even knows he has a girlfriend.
Yeah. Because he doesn't talk about
very private
his personal life really in public. Yeah. He doesn't private, but he doesn't like. Yeah. It's not in his material or anything.
Yeah. 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 He's got the stage Dave Hill and the real Dave Hill, and you know both.
Yeah.
So
they're pretty similar, though, to be honest.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Except you don't get to see him hanging with his chick.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah.
I bet she's awesome.
She is. Yeah. Yeah. She's got to cool. be. She's very supportive.
And, yeah. Yeah.
She's cool.
Okay. So, Dave, what are you doing with Dave? You're doing all that stuff. So what's the routine like? You're working with him every day? Or?
Yeah. So we have 3 weekly podcasts right now. So there's Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, which is basically just, it's either Dave interviewing someone or me and Dave just chatting on the phone, basically. Yeah. And there's not a lot of structure
there.
Oh,
that's done on the phone?
Sometimes we meet up in person. It's just, you know, I live in Queens. He lives in East Village. So
it sounds very good.
Yeah. So it's
you've got a good phone hookup.
Yeah. Right? Well, because we invested in some good mics and then we just tape them over Skype.
Oh, great.
And a lot of times, like, people can't even tell the difference. So
you can't.
Yeah. We have Dave Hill's podcast every Friday. Then there's So You're Canadian, which is on the Maximum Fun Network. Mm-hmm. And that show is just Dave interviewing one Canadian each episode. It could be more well-known Canadian, like Malcolm Gladwell was on the first episode, or it can just be someone who listens to the show who's a fan.
Cool. You know what? I want to get to like where your head is at. So you're doing these 3 shows, you know, 3 shows with Dave.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Dave time.
Yes.
There's money. That's the part of your living, and part of your living is the QED, and then you got other stuff
and then
going
just,
on.
The publicity stuff, really.
Yeah, you're doing press for other people.
Yeah, because once I started doing, you know, just trying to get press to write about Dave Hill's podcasting, as when we relaunched it, I realized, like, oh, I'm pretty good. You know, I was doing PR for QED.
Right.
But that's, you know, it's much different beast when you're trying to get press for a venue that has, you know, 100 shows every month.
Yeah, right.
Versus like, hey, do you want to just check out this podcast and write about it? It seemed a little less daunting. And then once I started doing that and we got some good write-ups and stuff like right off the bat, I was like, oh, I can do this for my friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, like, I know a lot of people in the comedy world. So I just started emailing people. I was like, hey, I'm trying to do more of this. Do you want to work together? And I'll do it super cheap just so I can get the experience. And luckily, so many great people were receptive to that. Like Ted Alexander was like, oh, yeah, sure. Because he was just launching a podcast.
Oh, he was performing last night.
Yeah, he's the best.
Awesome.
Yeah. And he lives in Astoria, too. So I knew him a lot from QED and stuff.
Yeah, he's great. He just had a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Super cute. But yeah, then, so I started doing the press stuff, and then I have like so many people I know do podcasts, and I started doing press for them, and I was like, oh, I think I can do this kind of full time. And so I scaled back my time at QED, and I've been able to just live off of like freelancing and podcasting.
Fabulous.
And, yeah.
So that must feel great.
It's great. It's stressful because
you can't control who's going to write about shit.
Well, there's that. Yeah, that's always super frustrating. There's also like, I kind of get into my, I was like, oh, if people aren't writing me back, that's because like they hate me and they don't want to.
Yeah, you take it personally, right?
And so it's like, it can be hard. I try not to take it personally because I know, you know, these people probably, like, you probably get, you know, 50 emails. Like,
no, I don't. But I get 50 people not writing back every day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. People are big on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough world out there.
So that
but you're doing it. See, it's hard. I mean, I just do it for me mostly. But like, it's, I would think if I'm doing it for somebody else, I'd be like, fuck it. They just don't like the person. You take that personally too?
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I do.
Really, you really like got a lot of
I just get yeah
service in there.
I take it like very seriously.
So where does your emotional stress or whatever your I mean, you know, where does it come from? Is it from your upbringing or is it just you come by it naturally? Is it chemical or what is it? What do you think?
I think I don't know. I had an older brother growing up. I still do, but kind of like tormented me a lot. And I think maybe that had that kind of like led to some anxiety or depression. I don't know.
So maybe your brother, you've talked about all this stuff in therapy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I
so you're well aware of all, you're very well, what do they say? A self-awareness is the booby prize of life.
Yeah. I don't know. You think like because I do have a lot of anxiety issues that I wouldn't want to get into a field where I'm either constantly in front of a microphone or I'm trying to get the attention of people who, you know, 8 billion other people also try to get the attention.
So are we talking about doing your own comedy? Because you do comedy. Is that something that you've thought about making your priority or
not really? Once I started producing with, you know, started producing more live comedy and then doing the podcast and stuff, I realized I enjoy that aspect a little bit more than just getting on stage and telling jokes.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, you know, when you and I were like in that stand-up class, right. I felt like there was such like, you know, I started going to open mics and every right. comic will tell you, or any comic who's like trying to seriously pursue it, they're like, you just have to get up like 4 or 5 times a night.
I
or
know.
And I was doing that for a while, for a few
yeah,
years.
Yeah, I remember. I was really impressed. I was like, you know, I realized at that class that I can't really do comedy because I can't really do that. Like I mean, even when I was, I know I'm old, but even when I was young, I wasn't that person. I still went to bed. I was I didn't ever stayed out all night every night.
Yeah. Yeah. I that was the thing. Like, I just got so tired of it. And then, you know, I was working at QED, so it was hard to like take nights off to do stand up.
But you gave it, you did it. You did it, man.
I did. Yeah. I tried to do it as much as I can. And then I don't know if I got burned out. I was just like, I'm just going to take a break and focus on producing and writing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I just never started really doing stand-up again, but I still, you know, I do weekly podcasts and I write stuff and I still get on stage and stuff. So I feel like I'm still
scratch that itch.
A comedian, just not like a, you know, stand-up comic. Ugh.
Yeah, no, I admire people that, well, you have to want that so bad in order to like get in that ring.
It's hard. I mean, yeah, it's, I see people who are absolutely like just killing it and doing so much work and still not
making
like
it.
Making it. Yeah. And it's,
I know, you know it's like being
discouraging to see.
It is. It's the most discouraged. I know.
But I used to play in a band and that that was so much harder.
Really?
Number one, when you're doing stand up, you get instant feedback. So if you tell a joke and people are laughing, it's like, oh, that was funny. If people aren't laughing, like, oh, that joke wasn't
good. You're
right
there with the audience.
With, you know, with music, you could play for an hour and people will applaud after every song, but like, you don't really know if they're actually enjoying it.
That's nice. That sounds great. What are you talking about? I love that. No dead silence.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. No, but I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah. I think I just prefer.
Well, I give you a lot of credit for working your way through that, and now you're, you know, this is good. This is a good example, folks. He sort of he went strong onto a road and found a highway that was good for him.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm saying? But the whole thing is, you didn't just say fuck it, I'm staying home. You went out and did it, which is really impressive.
Thank you.
For everyone. For anyone who, you know.
Anyone, yeah.
Wherever you go.
Yeah.
So I want to hear about your brother. So how many kids in your family?
It's just me and him.
And your parents.
And my, you know, my parents, yeah.
So, how much older is he?
He's 2.5 years older.
What's your relationship with him like now?
Like today?
Yeah.
today is fine. I don't know about tomorrow.
So it varies.
It varies, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We
Yeah. And what was it like when you were growing up? Like, how did he treat you? How did your parents handle it?
I think of like the story that I've always been told is like he was such a great kid, and then I was born, and he like changed dramatically. So I think there's always been a little bit of like a jealousy type thing. And then there's also, you know, me constantly wanting to be accepted by him too. And like, we are friends and we're close and everything. And I, you know, he has two kids who like I absolutely love and everything. But, you know, he really knows how to push my buttons as well. So I feel like every few months or so we get into some big blow up and then stop talking for a couple of weeks and then just make up. And
what kind of things does he?
Oh, God. I'll tell you like, the most recent.
Yeah.
Most recent thing was my parents retired and moved upstate a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so they live in this house now. And, you know, we grew up in a tiny apartment in Queens. So mm-hmm. very much used to like four people sharing one bathroom.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I can totally relate to that.
But now my parents have this house upstate. And so my wife and I, we have this like tiny little bedroom that's, you know, it's fine for us. And then there's like a bathroom that's kind of like the general bathroom for the entire house. And that's like our bathroom. There's a shower in there and everything. And then my brother has this huge bedroom in the very back with a bathroom connected to it. And, you know, he has the two kids. So, of course, like that's the one he should take. However, he makes a point of only using our bathroom the entire time he's there.
Wow.
So, like, I think he was there for like 20, and he's, you know, it'd be one thing if he was just using the bathroom, but he's also just
very
like,
passive aggressive.
It's a little passive aggressive.
He's
slobbish and.
But do you tell him? Do you set your boundaries? Do you tell him directly? And
then
what is
he? This is the first time we've argued about this.
I want to punch this guy right now. Where is he?
He's at work. He's like, there's no way he's ever going to hear this either. So, but he.
Until.
Yeah. I was just talking about this too. It's like, I don't think it was his intention, like, oh, I can't wait to get up there and then use Chris's bathroom just to piss him off. But at the same time, when he does it and I call him out on it, he starts smirking like he did do it on purpose.
So he doesn't respect your boundaries.
No, not at all.
So when you were growing up, what happened then? How'd your parents handle that?
I think they just separated us a lot.
What would happen when you're growing up? Was there a lot of fighting?
Yeah.
Was there?
So, oh yeah, a lot of physical fighting. A lot of just kind of, you know, I feel we moved when I think I was six and he was nine,
mm-hmm.
and I think that move, like he had, you know, friends that he knew from kindergarten that he suddenly mm-hmm. was like pulled away from. And then I kind of just started from scratch like in kindergarten in a new school. And so I think that might have caused like some aggression between us. Like, he's like, oh, he gets to just grow up with this group of people and I have to like start over.
So he's always comparing himself to you.
Yeah, probably.
So what's he like? Like, is he, I mean, do other people find the issues? Do other people have the similar issues with him that you have with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he's like that.
Yeah. I mean, he's the kind of guy, if he was sitting in here, he would just rip a fart and not even acknowledge it.
Oh.
And he would just sit here.
So, but how did he get married?
That's a good question. I don't know. No, he's been married for, I think it's going to be 5 years.
But he has friends. Does he have friends?
Yeah, he's married.
And,
they have
social life.
Kids. And... they have friends. He's a good father. They're both mm-hmm. very good parents.
What kind of job does he have?
He works at this, I should probably know exactly what they do, but he works, he manages like presentations for like these big like corporate meetings. Like,
oh, that's
he's
a
in charge
good job,
of, like,
right? I mean, yeah. He's in charge of.
Yeah, yeah, he's doing. He's been there for a while.
Yeah,
too.
So he's got to have shit together. We're not talking about a totally crazy person.
Oh
here.
No! I mean, yeah, he has a shit together way more than I do. Probably ever will.
So have you guys had any direct conversations about your relationship?
Yeah.
And what's his his take?
We haven't had one in a while. Uh-huh. You know, we were at each other's throats, I feel like, until the time that he went to college. And then once he went to college, he kind of like mellowed out a little bit. And then we were able to get along. We became really close.
Oh.
So like throughout, you know, like since I was like 20 or so, like he's been a pretty big force in my life. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every relationship has its.
What do you look up? You look up to him in a certain way. What about it? Is it just because like when he was older, he was, you know, able to do shit, or what is that? Do you look?
I mean, yeah, no, I totally do. He's really just—he's like the smartest person I know by far.
Oh, he's smart.
He's he's very book smart. Mm-hmm. he knows like every, like you can ask him like, hey, so, you know, in World War One, like what exactly, like, and he'll tell you for like 3 hours.
Encyclopedia
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
What about, what was I going to say? So he's smart. He's smart that way. But what about like with, you know, people and emotional IQ?
You mean like as far as him having like tact or like
awareness, self-awareness, awareness of other people?
Zero. Zero.
It's like a little bit like a autist. What do they call that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the spectrum, maybe. Yeah. I don't know if he's ever been evaluated.
But his emotional needs are very, very different than yours.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's part of it, too.
Yeah.
So did your parents, I'm wondering if your parents like took charge of that and protected you or not.
I think they did a little bit.
Because I'm a little mad at them. Feeling a little angry at them. Have you talked to them about it directly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What do they say?
I think at this point, they just wish that we, you know, we're both in our 30s. Like, we should just be getting along. But
do you,
they know. I mean, they know that he goes out of his way to piss people off. So it's not. It's not exactly shocking.
Yeah.
Like, when he does.
He's an angry guy. Have you worked on, like, keeping your boundaries separate from him and all that?
Yeah.
Like, don't take him personally, and you know,
I've learned. I mean,
I do take him personally, though. You take everything personal,
yeah,
because that's you.
I know. Why do I do that?
It's really hard.
No, I don't. He, yeah, I'm sorry, I forgot what your question, your most recent.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I'm just trying to figure out, like, you obviously have the self awareness to mm-hmm. know that, like, what the story is and how it happened, and it's not a, you know, nothing you did and all that. But yeah. Do you have the coping skills? Because here's my opinion about therapy is, and all this shit mm-hmm. related, is that you can't, like, I mean, my mother is yelling in my head all day long.
Yeah.
And it's fucking annoying and it's bullshit, mm-hmm. but I know it's going on, and I know, like, I can see, I cope with it. I know, yeah. like, I'm not going to let it destruct me. Yeah. I'm not going to let it lead me to destructive behavior. So I'm saying, have you gotten your brother in that in your brain, in that camp?
I sometimes think that I do, and then he'll do something like use my bathroom 20 minutes after.
No, I'm talking about with other people. Like, I'm wondering how your relationship with him, because mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter anymore what your relationship with him is like. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that relationship carries over to other relationships. And I'm also thinking about, like, the relationships that you've developed with all these guys.
Yeah.
You know, that you respect.
I do.
And you're aware of that, right?
I never really thought too much about how, like, there's a correlation between that. But now that you mention it, yeah, absolutely. Like, I am constantly the boundary thing. Like, I never want to overstep my boundary. Like, I don't ever want to come off as, like, too aggressive, I guess.
With the guys you work with?
Yeah, yeah. With anyone I work with. And with him, I think it's, like, the complete opposite. Like, he will be aggressive with anyone. He doesn't care.
So so you'll be aggressive with, but what about him?
With him, we've gotten to screaming matches. We haven't gotten
So your relationship with him has formed your relationships with the people you work with, in a sense, in that you are very careful about not crossing boundaries with them.
Yeah, I think
which
so.
Which is probably a good thing, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, do you think it holds you back?
No.
It's a good thing, right?
I think it is a good thing, but mentally, is Lisa going to be mad at me 2 hours from now because I was 45 minutes late?
I'm like that like, too. No, I'll that's spiral. Why I love you, because I'm the same way.
And I'll like
no,
spiral.
No, no.
Or like
no.
Someone will like, you know, write an email to me and I can read it like, oh no, they didn't mean anything by that. Or can mean it like that was a total dig. And
no, I was thrilled actually. You reached out to me to be on the podcast. I was totally, the radio show, and I was totally thrilled and flattered.
Nice.
So
yeah.
No, but I'm the same way, you know, and I get that. I get that feeling. I think a lot of people are, but no one wants to admit it except for us because we're not afraid of that.
Yeah.
But here's what I am concerned about for you, Chris, mm-hmm. is I'm concerned. I'm invested in this already. It only took a half an hour. I'm really invested in this now. So I think what I'm concerned about for you is that your relationship with your brother, which is still it's still affecting you. You're still trying to work. You haven't been able to. Totally makes sense. You haven't been able to quite separate from him, right? He still has an effect on you.
Yeah, totally.
He's an aggressive asshole. Oh, sorry. Of course he does. And the thing is that I just don't want that to hold you back.
Yeah.
With the other people that you're working with, because it feels to me like you are mirroring some of the same, or that you may be trying to resolve. What the fuck do I know? Yep. You may be trying to resolve some of your issues with your brother, with the guys that you're working with.
Maybe. You think? I think there is a little bit of like, I want an older, more like mentorish type of, like a mentor to like kind of be that kind of older brother figure.
Mm-hmm.
And I do find myself a lot, like the people that I work with, I do start to think of them. And I have to be careful not to like cross the boundary where I'm like, you know, constantly seeking this person's approval or something. But
right.
But yeah, it's definitely. I think there is.
So I mean, I know like for sure. I mean, I haven't seen you and Dave together much, but I know Dave well enough to be sure that he really respects you and treats you with respect.
Yeah,
and I think the rest of those guys do. So is that healing for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm even still kind of shocked. Like, you know, Dave was doing this festival in Portland a couple months ago, and they asked him if he wanted to do any of his podcast while he was there, and he was like, yeah, I'd love to, can you just fly my producer out? And they were like, sure. And they flew me out there, and then I didn't have anywhere to stay, and he's just like, just stay in my, like, we'll just get two beds and just stay in my room. And like the whole weekend, just like, he was just going out of his way to make sure he like included me in everything. And like, that's the kind of like
yeah, and that's so Dave.
I don't even know if it's like intentional or that's just like how he is. I think that's just how he
is.
Caring and supportive person.
Yeah, he's unusual.
Yeah.
In the best way.
And he really just like, you know, a couple of years ago, like just basically just took me under his wing and was like, he's like, yeah, let's just work on stuff together.
So you, and, which is good for both of you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So that's great but you made that happen.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. You should own that. Own that. So yeah, no, it's interesting thinking about that, how, those relationships, how you wound up. It's so funny how you wound up in those kinds of relationships.
Yeah, yeah. And there's other people I work with that I feel like, you know, Frank Conniff is the same way. He's someone I, you know, grew up watching on TV and now I text with him and stuff. So that's like, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of surreal. But like I do, you know, I don't think anyone finds a mentor or
you know, just by like, you know, posting on Craigslist or something.
Well, no, there's chemistry involved.
Yeah, it feels has to be a kind of like a natural progression.
Well, also because you were pursuing your interests in comedy and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
But also, like, you found a good, like, a place that had the same kind of values, like a nice place.
Yeah.
You know, QED and Cambry and Christian are fabulous people. And
yeah.
So it kind of clicked, whereas, like, there's a lot of other places that aren't.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. Cambry, too. I mean, she really, like, I would have absolutely no career in comedy if it wasn't for her. So.
No, I see Cambry as a mentor to me.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
and a lot of people.
She's just taught me so much, and I'm forever grateful for her. I was like, mm-hmm. you know, when I scaled back my time there at QED, I was like, oh, we're not going to get to hang out as much, but I'm still there, like all the time producing stuff, so we still get to see
right.
But yeah, that's kind of like another. Like,
what was your relationship with your dad like?
It's always been good. We've always been close.
But what is it like? Like, are you guys? Is he like a real authority figure? Does he take charge of things? Does he let you? Does he not like? This is what I'm picturing.
Yeah.
I'm picturing that like what does he do?
Well, he's retired now.
But what did he do?
He worked as a project manager for Citigroup.
A project manager.
For like 30-something years.
So he's a guy, just like what your brother does. So he's kind in of, charge of everything. And he like did some take charge stuff at the family. But then I'm having a feeling like he didn't.
He was definitely the more, my mom, I feel like, was the more authoritative type. But
I feel like he didn't really. Maybe he wasn't noticing you.
Maybe.
Like he didn't really think about you a lot.
Maybe. I think.
I mean, he loved you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's just not like that.
I feel like, I mean, at this point, like I know now whenever my brother and I get into these fights, my parents tend to side with me.
Oh, and I know that they don't. Nice.
Yeah. But it's also like, it's usually like pretty black and white. Like, yeah, he's out of his mind. Why would you deal with that? But,
so when you were a kid, like, was he specific about, you know, you should do this and you should do that, or guiding you, or?
No, not really.
Discipline.
My parents pretty much, I think they wanted us to pursue things that interested us, and they didn't want us to feel obligated to do anything. So, and not that like I jumped around a lot, like, mm-hmm. but I remember, I played Little League, I think, for like 6 or 7 years. And those like last couple of years, I hated it. And I think at one point I just mentioned to my dad, I was like, I don't really like doing it. He's like, oh, well, just stop. You don't have to do it anymore. And I thought in my head, I was like, I have to keep doing this because my dad wants me to. And then like, as soon as I bring it up to him, he's like, oh yeah, you don't, whatever. You know, I was much more into like art and music than sports and stuff. Mm-hmm. So
were you the only one in your family or parents, brother like that? Or was it really you?
The artist, I mean, my brother's always been a writer. He's been a writer since as long as I can remember. But I don't think he really ever pursued that much until he got like old, like until he's like in his 20s.
Like when you're growing up.
But yeah, I mean, growing up, I was always really into just like art and doing music. I always wanted to be a radio DJ. So like, the fact that podcasting is so accessible now is like a dream. Like if I had known when I was a kid, like, oh yeah, you can just do basically a radio show in your own apartment. Like that would have blown my mind.
You know, it's really funny. Your personality is so, to me, consistent and cheery.
Oh, thank you.
But does it, it doesn't, it's not like that for you, is it?
No.
What's it like for you?
It's House of Horrors. No.
Like, what's it like? What's it like in there?
People tell me that. People always tell me that. Like, you always seem so chill and relaxed. And I'm like, really? Like, I always feel like I'm on the verge of mental breakdown.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what? Like what?
Is
it more like what other... Do you get caught up in what other people are thinking?
Yeah, I do.
A lot, right?
Yeah.
And so like therefore obsessed. You have a hard time knowing what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good observation.
Oh.
I don't know.
No, don't So then, see, here's what I want to see.
Now I'm pissed I paid for therapy earlier.
Maybe we should have a meeting with your shrink.
Yeah.
Next time, bring me along. Right. No, but the whole thing is like, here's what I'm saying for that I want for you is that I want to, and I think you're on this track, but I want to see you keep developing your own things because I think that it's really important that we all recognize how smart and charming and witty and productive and capable Chris Gersbach is.
Thank you.
And a lot of that, and I go through this too, and a lot of that I think is, there's a lot of, and I know exactly what you mean, a lot of energy gets put into, you. I think it's hard to know who we are and what we want when we're concerned about how that's going for other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm worried about you creatively. That's what I'm saying. Oh. I want to see you keep developing creatively and that stuff gets, you know, you don't want that stuff to get in the way.
Yeah. I don't think the creative stuff like that, I don't feel like that ever gets a, like I'm always like coming up with new ideas and things to do and stuff. But I
and
do.
You're getting good encouragement.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think my thing is more like, I don't want to ever seem like I'm bragging about something. Like I'll post a status like, hey, we're doing this festival next month. And then like, it'll get 2 likes. And I'm like, oh my God, does everyone just think I'm like a pompous asshole? Like why? And I will go into like spiraling, like I'll spend like an entire weekend.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Something like that. Yeah.
Wow. I think that's really, really common, you know, and I think that's like a social media thing because really hard to know, like if you get what you get a response from, what you don't. But also you know, it's sort of ironic that you're put yourself in this situation in entertainment.
Yeah.
Which is like the most ego based driven.
And it's also just so like, it's such an unfair business just, you know, in terms of like the, you know, Dave Hill has been doing stand up for 15 years. He hasn't done a stand up special yet. You know,
yeah, I know. It's mind blowing. You know, I always say to Dave, and I don't know. I feel like, I mean it in the best way possible. And I hope my husband, see, I'm worried what Dave thinks because my husband once said I was insulting or something. But I always say to him, like, you know, like, you should have your own TV show. Like, yeah. Dave would be such a great
talk show.
Yeah,
like whatever.
Talk show host for like, a major network or any, you know, anything like instead
like
of Conan, I'd rather see him instead of Conan.
Yeah. At this point, I think I would.
Yeah. So
I love Conan. I don't mean that.
No, I don't know. I don't know enough about Conan. Conan, I like Dave. Dave is much more accessible. Like Conan seems like pompous to me.
Yeah. Dave's just kind of like your funny friend who's always got the right comment to make, you know? Uh-huh.
Is that how you see him?
Yeah, he's just...
Do you think he's really socially graceful?
He's just very quick, and I never see it coming, too. So a lot of times, like, we'll just be having conversations or we're doing the podcast, and, like, he's the funniest guy on the planet.
He is. He really is.
Yeah.
So what do you... Can I ask you... Can we talk about Dave? What do you think... Do you think there's anything holding him back?
Yeah, I think all the same things that are holding me back.
Really?
I don't want to ever see like I'm bragging. Like he doesn't even want to. I think he's worried like 10 times more than I am of seeming like someone who's like too self-indulged. Basically.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Like, you know, we have a Patreon for our podcast and it does well. We, you know, it's enough for us to want to keep doing
Dave
it.
Dave has how many like Twitter followers? He must say he's like half a million or something.
No, he had like something like 90,000 followers, and then they banned him from Twitter. So he's
there was a thing about that, right? but that's something. I mean, that's proof.
Oh yeah, no, he's got a great. I mean, everywhere. You know, we were walking around Portland, and like people were like yelling at stuff at him from the.
He's a celebrity for real. Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like after only hanging out with him in New York City for 4 years or whatever, it's like I never really experienced that. And then you take him out of New York and it's like, oh yeah,
outside of New York City, like a lot of people know who he is.
Sure.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it must be funny to see that. Like, of course, people in New York know him, but when you get out, and then you guys probably all know who knows him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
he's
That's funny.
Yeah,
that's great.
I feel like everyone knows him too. Like every comedian knows who he is.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So you think that Dave doesn't promote himself enough?
Well, he doesn't like with the Patreon. Like, you know, the only way to really grow it is to just like. You have to constantly like ram it down people's throats.
Do what we do here at Radio Free Brooklyn. Please donate. Oh, did I tell you to donate? And I mean it, folks. Donate. We really do need the money. This is important. This is a lot of people. It's not just one guy. It's like 80 people here. But go ahead. Competing now.
Well, yeah, I'm just, you know, he says that on the podcast. Please support us on Patreon and everything. But I'm always like, you have to like really engage. Like you have to get on social media and say like, hey, we need your support. And he doesn't ever want to do any of that. And I understand.
He won't do it.
But
does he feel frustrated with his career? I mean, it seems golden to me, but
it does to me too. I think he does get he gets frustrated about it. Yeah.
But not enough to
Well, I've seen, I kind of understand. It's, you know, I saw him were you at the Union Hall taping he did?
I don't think so.
It's like back in September, he did like two back-to-back shows for his new, he recorded a stand-up album, but he also had a camera crew there to film it and everything. I think they're going to try to shop it around, but you know, it was an hour long special and it is all jokes that I've seen him do before. And I was still like laughing my ass off in the back of the room watching him do it. But you'll like, you know, I've seen quite a few stand-up specials that have made it onto Netflix, Amazon, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they're just not as good as his. And I'm like, why is he not getting, like, why is he
That's
not doing?
That's exactly how I feel about him.
Yeah.
And I can't I mean,
I don't know why. Like, I haven't heard.
Because he's really successful, but why he should be like a mass.
Yeah. Yeah. It's boggling. So
yeah, humility. Humility is just bad.
Yeah,
humility. Do you think? Like, for example, actually, we only have 7 minutes left. But like one time, I met Amy Schumer. I did a therapy session with her. Actually, in my own private office at home.
Oh wow!
For a project.
How long ago?
2010.
Oh, okay. So like right before she.
Yeah, she was touring. Colleges with Dave Attell opening for Dave Attell. I mean, not too shabby.
Yeah, yeah.
That night she was in between sets at the Comedy Cellar. So the thing about Amy is, I mean, I don't pretend to know her really well, but man, that chick has an ego.
Really?
Ego. Yeah.
So do you think you need that to get as successful as her?
I'm just curious. I'm just really, really curious. We were doing this project, which involved a photographer, an arty project that was about the woman you're afraid of turning into.
Mm-hmm.
And her thing was that she was afraid of turning into an isolated person because too many people like her or wanted something from her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just sitting there. I didn't know how to handle. I mean, because I never heard that before where somebody's going like, you know, everybody wants to like a piece of me after the show and everybody, you know, my mother was charismatic and people just like me. It felt like she was saying people like me too much. And that's my worst problem.
Yeah.
So I wonder about that. All creative people want in every field, right?
Yeah. And actually, like working more and more with Dave, he's opened my eyes up. Because I view him as a hugely successful comedian.
Yeah.
But I hear him complaining about things. And I'm like, oh, so even when you get the success, you still, like if you're a creative person, you're still going to feel like it's not.
It's never enough. I think that's
it's
true.
Like, it's oddly comforting in a way because like I can get upset at myself about that kind of thing, but then just remember, well, even if I did get that, I still might be kind of miserable. So
you'll be the same person. I've seen that in our world. Like, Mick Lane Thomas, one time I interviewed her and she told me that something like how upset she was that she didn't get in the Whitney Biennial. Oh, wow. You know, and here's a woman you might not, have you heard of her? Her paintings sell for like six figures easy or more, you know? Yeah. So, and she's brilliant. But anyway, so we only have 4 minutes left, but I want to make sure, like, so what are your goals? What are your long-term goals?
Oh man. One of my goals last year was to get one of our podcasts into a comedy festival, and we got into three. So that's
fabulous.
I don't know. This, I would, as much as I love doing publicity stuff, I would like to just do podcasting stuff more.
Like your own podcast?
Yeah. I'd like what Dave and I are doing. Like, I'd like that to be our like main source, or my main source of income. I don't know how to really do that. But
that's what would be.
Yeah.
That's something that you would be happy doing. Like doing.
Yeah.
A podcast.
Yeah.
Doing your own podcast with another person that you like.
Yeah.
And
if
then
I could just do that full time.
Is that a
so
money making possibility?
It can be. It takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But you know, we're both mm-hmm. equally committed to it. So.
So no kids for you guys?
No.
Yeah. There's. No. I always say reproducing is useless.
You don't have kids, right?
Well, I have a stepson who I love dearly.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to deal with, like, I didn't make a decision about that.
Yeah.
About having that. And
my wife and I, before we got married, we were both just like, I don't really care. Like, we were not dying to have kids. And they were like, well, let's just say we're not planning to have kids. And then if one of us decides, then we'll start talking about it. And then like my brother had two kids and, you know, loved those kids. But every time we babysit them at the end, we're like, yeah, we definitely don't, like, we don't want to have kids.
Yeah, no, it's
every
a
single
big
time.
It's a big commitment that has no, and it's so unpredictable.
No, an 18-year commitment.
Oh, I don't know. You know, being a stepmom, you're not really on the front lines. So
yeah,
I can't.
Yeah.
But it's hard. I mean, I've seen it close up. It's
totally.
Yeah. Okay. 2 minutes. So let's talk about what we want to make to remind people about what there's so many things. It's chris-gersbach.com.
Yeah. That's my website. So you can see I have all my events on there and all the podcasts I do on there. That's probably the best spot to just go. And then I'm on Twitter at CS Gersbach, Instagram at CS Gersbach. I'm on Facebook, but I hate it. And
yeah.
Would like to not be on it anymore.
Yeah.
My field, it makes it kind of hard to do, but.
Are a lot of comedians leaving Facebook?
I feel like more comedians are gravitating towards Instagram just for like promotional. Yeah. And I always have the most success promoting on Instagram anyway.
Is that right?
But
here's a tip.
Facebook sucks.
Facebook sucks. I find it the easiest to use.
I do too. That's the problem, is that, you know, it's like the first one that I really got started on. So like I feel comfortable there.
I like it because it's visuals and headlines. Like it's not just all visuals isn't my thing. I like writing and pictures together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Instagram's not that.
I know.
It's all
very
pictures.
Different.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think it would be great? Like, Chris, tell people that they should go to our Drive to Five campaign.
You guys should totally go to the Drive to Five campaign. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
No, okay.
Yeah.
What is...
Because you know what? We're having our 5th anniversary of the station. Must have started
when
QED started,
That's
right?
That's awesome, yeah.
This is my 5th year.
That's
like, congratulations. I've been doing it like 5 years now. Can you get over it? You're my 22nd show.
And it's weekly.
It is weekly. And we're going to have to get you to come back because we have that. You've got a lot of problems, Chris.
I know.
You've got a lot of problems. You're like clay to work with. It's really fun. So anyway, but I do want to remind everybody to stay tuned because we've got so much great program. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit about.